The parable of the vineyard. And Jesus spoke to them in parables. A man planted a vineyard and set a hedge about it, and dug a pit for the winepress, and built a tower, and rented it out to husbandmen. Then he went into another country. And at the season, that's when the harvest should be ready, he sent to the husbandmen a servant, so he might receive from the husbandmen the fruits of the vineyard. And they took him and beat him and sent him away empty-handed. And again he sent to them another servant, and him they wounded in the head, and handled shamefully. And he sent another, and him they killed, and many others, beating some and killing some. So, the person who owns the vineyard seems to be God, and he has put these men there to work it, called the husbandmen. And this was the Jews. But he sends his servants to them to get some fruit. And those servants are his servants, the prophets. And some they killed, some they beat up, some they ignored. So finally, he says that he had one beloved son. And of course, that in the story represents Jesus. He sent him last to them, saying, "Surely they will reverence my son." But those husbandmen said among themselves, "This is the heir. Come, let us kill him, and the inheritance will be ours." That's just what the Jews thought about Jesus. And they took him and killed him and threw him out of the vineyard. It's a bit like Jesus crucified outside the city of Jerusalem. What, therefore, will the Lord of the vineyard do? He will come and destroy the husbandmen and will give the vineyard to others. Now, the others, I think, are us. So he expects us to give him the spiritual fruit that he's arranged. Because in another parable in Isaiah chapter 5, another similar parable about the vineyard, we're told that God did absolutely everything so that this vineyard could bring forth lots and lots of fruit. And so in our lives, everything has been arranged so that we might bring forth spiritual fruit. Although we might think, "Oh, if only I lived somewhere else, if only this wasn't in my life, or he wasn't in my life, or they weren't in my life, it would all be so much better for me spiritually." Well, actually, God knows exactly, and he's given us the optimal, the best situation, so that we can have fruit. Jesus goes on, "Haven't you read in the scriptures, 'The stone which the builders rejected, the same was made the headstone of the corner.'" That's the most important stone in the building. So the builders, like the Jews, they rejected Jesus. Just as the husbandmen, the workers in the vineyard, rejected all the prophets and killed the Son of God, Jesus. And this had been prophesied, as Jesus is saying, that in the scriptures and the Old Testament it was written, "The stone which the builders rejected, the same was made the headstone of the corner. This was from the Lord, and it is marvelous in our eyes." And they tried to arrest him, but they feared the crowd, for they realized that he'd spoken the parable against them. So they left him and went away. And they sent to Jesus some of the Pharisees and of the Herodians, that's the supporters of Herod, that they might catch him out in his teaching. It must have been awful all the time listening to people who were trying to catch you out, who were not sincerely listening to you, but just trying to catch you out. And when they arrived, they said to him, "Teacher, we know that you're truthful and don't care about anyone's opinion. You're not swayed by appearances, but you truly teach the way of God. Is it lawful to give tribute to Caesar or not? Shall we give or shall we not give?" But Jesus, knowing that they were hypocrites, that is, they were actors, they were just saying something, but in their heart they had a totally different idea. He said to them, "Why do you test me? Bring me a penny, that I may look at it." And they brought it, and he said to them, "Whose is this image and inscription on it?"
How much was a penny in those days?
Well, you worked all day for a penny, so it was what you got for a day's hard work. And they said to him, "Caesar's." And Jesus said to them, Jesus said to them, "Give to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." So Jesus is saying, yeah, sure, if that piece of metal, which is all a coin is, has got Caesar's inscription on it, well, give it to him. But whatever has got God's image on, you've got to give to God. And what has got God's image on? Our own bodies, our whole lives. Because we have been made in the image of God. And then there came to him Sadducees, who say that there is no resurrection. And they asked him, Teacher, Moses wrote to us, if a man's brother dies and leaves a wife behind him and has no children, then his brother should marry his wife and raise up children to his brother. Well, there were seven brothers with us. The first took a wife and died, leaving no children. The second took her and died, leaving no children behind him, and the third in the same way. And the seven did this, and they all left no children. Last of all, the woman also died. Now, this is obviously a trick question. They say this actually happened, but it's pretty obvious it didn't. And if it did happen, it would show that this family were pretty well cursed by God. So, in the resurrection, they say, whose wife shall she be? They didn't believe in a resurrection. Jesus said to her, is not the reason you err because you don't know the scriptures nor the power of God? Now, if I were Jesus, I'd have said, oh, that's not true. You're just making that up. But he goes along with people. Okay, if that's what you think, I'll go along with it. But within their own story, he turns it all around and says, it's because you don't know the power of God. For when they shall rise from the dead, they don't marry, nor will they be given in marriage, but are as the angels in heaven. So if we're going to be like the angels in heaven, that means that we will not die, we will not get married. It shows them that angels can't die. And the wages of sin is death. And so if angels can't die, they also can't sin. And when we're in the kingdom, we will also not die, which means that we also won't sin. So all the ideas that you hear that, oh, there's angels that sin, well, this isn't correct. Of course, sometimes the word angel does just mean a messenger and can be used about men, like it was used about the disciples of John the Baptist. But the angels, as in the supernatural beings in heaven, they cannot sin because they live forever. And Jesus goes on, now about the dead, that they are resurrected. Haven't you read in the book of Moses and the passage about the burning bush, how God spoke to him saying, I am the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac and the God of Jacob. He is not the God of the dead, but of the living. You do err greatly. In other words, these men were dead, and yet God was still the God of Abraham, Isaac and Jacob, because from his point of view, they still lived. They didn't live. They were dead and buried and unconscious. But because God knew that they would be resurrected, and he's outside of time as we know it. One of the scribes came and heard them arguing, and knowing that Jesus had answered them well, he asked him, what commandment is the first of all? Jesus replied, the first is, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength. The second is this, You shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment greater than these. So they wanted to know, which is the one big commandment? Is it to love God, or is it to love your neighbor? And Jesus quotes them both, and he says, there is no other commandment, that is in the singular, greater than these two. So he's saying what John says in his letters, that you can't love God unless you love your neighbor. And if you say you love God but hate your brother, then you don't really love God. The scribe said to him, well said, teacher, you have spoken the truth, that God is one, and there is none other but he. So God's not a trinity, he is one. And to love him with all the heart and with all the understanding and with all the strength and to love his neighbor as himself is much more than all whole burnt offerings and sacrifices. In other words, Jesus is saying that when they offered the sacrifices, God had asked them to offer every part of the animal. And so he's saying that we should give every part of our lives to God, not just a few hours on a Sunday or half an hour in the evening reading the Bible, but our whole life, every part of our life should be affected, how we play with each other, how we study, our attitudes to our parents, to our brothers and sisters, to our children. All these things, every part of life, is to be affected and given to him. When Jesus saw this man had answered wisely, he said to him, "You are not far from the kingdom of God." And after that, no one dared to ask Jesus any more questions. But Jesus asked them questions, as he taught in the temple. Why do the scribes say that the Christ, the Messiah, that's what Christ means, why do the scribes say that the Christ is the son of David? Because they thought that Messiah, when he came, was going to be less than David. David himself said in the Holy Spirit, "The Lord," that's God, "said to my Lord," that's Messiah, "Sit on my right hand until I make your enemies a footstool for your feet." David himself calls him Lord, so how is he his son? Jesus is saying, look, David is not the greatest. Messiah is going to be far greater than him, and David actually calls him his Lord. And the common people heard him gladly. So the message of the gospel is for the average, ordinary, worldly person. Not the clever, clever kids like the Pharisees and all these, but for the ordinary people. And in his teaching he said, "Beware of the scribes who desire to walk in long robes and to have greetings in the markets and the best seats in the synagogues and at feasts. They devour widows' houses," that is, they take money off widows who are poor and take all their wealth away from them. "And for a pretense they make long prayers. These will receive greater condemnation." And he sat down opposite the treasury and watched how the crowd threw money into the treasury. There was a big sort of container where they all poured their coins that went clankety-clank. And everyone thought, wow, he's given a lot. And many that were rich threw in a lot. But there came a poor widow, and she threw in two small copper coins, which make a penny. And he gathered his disciples and said to them, "Truly I tell you, this poor widow threw in more than all they that are throwing money into the treasury. They threw in money they didn't need, but she through her need threw in all that she had, all her living." And so Jesus was sensitive, and he is sensitive today, to what we do for him and what we don't do. And he is watching just as much as he ever was.